on that one. Welcome, everyone, to our wonderful Just Three Gents podcast here. We are on the Biconics Wrestling Podcast channel, and we have El Jefe, Mikey, here with us. We have the Professor, John. We've got myself, JVL, and we are here to review AEW Dynamite from the 17th of May. April. God, I am like, I'm excited. You know why I'm excited? Because the 17th is the day before all of us get together, if it was May, in the armpit of America to celebrate wrestling in New Jersey.
That's what's
on my brain there as I'm doing this stuff. The wrestling boys here at the wonderful Biconics Wrestling Podcast will be in New Jersey in Middletown Township at a wrestling con in person with merch, with hugs, with Jesse, with everything you'd want. It's going to be amazing.
That's not the armpit of America. I thought the armpit was like DeKalb, Illinois. Like, isn't that the armpit?
No, that's the weird mole next to the nipple. The armpit is obviously right there where it's airing out. That's definitely in New Jersey. And we're right in the middle of it, too. So right, like, right here in the
pit. I see.
But that's part of that. You can also subscribe to this channel if you can't make it to New Jersey to see us there. You can click our alert bell to make sure you get all the different stuff we have during the week. You could always follow us on social media. Drop us a comment there, at BC WrestlePod. Tell Mikey why you like certain hosts better than others. I'm looking at you, Professor. And, of course, well, you won't explain why you can't figure out New Zealand versus British, but you can always, always drop a comment here and make sure that we hear from you, because we love to engage with you. And, Mikey, you tell us, there's people that actually like this stuff that we do, right?
Sure.
Kiwis. Ski Kiwi. Team. Ski Kiwis.
Can I get a hoya?
Private Party wasn't on the show tonight, Mikey. I don't know if we can do that, but just like sadness. That. Speaking of small bald things you want to squeeze, John Moxley entered into the arena as the IWGP champion. And gentlemen, this is how you do a rah-rah, yes, let's respond to the drama, yes, speech.
Yes.
It's a one-off line in a great promo about four other things going on that you just kind of wipe it under the rug and make your comment. Why did it take him 3 weeks to do this?
You said exactly what I was saying as I watched it. I was sort of like, this is what it needed to be 2 weeks ago. They gave it to Adam Copeland instead. Adam Copeland called for it. Adam Copeland got it. Adam Copeland was pretty close. We talked about that at length previously. This is how you do it. And you show up, shaved head, and you call things out, just enough subtext to not feel petty. And someone who, and I would love your opinions on this, someone who has a different type of WWE clout than Adam Copeland does. Where anyone who's followed John Moxley and knows that history and that story, which I myself had to catch up on for a while too, it means something different coming from John Moxley than it does coming from Adam Copeland. It just does. And it would mean something different if it was Christian, but that's not where Christian's at right now with what Christian's doing, right? But to hear it from John Moxley is like, oh, there's a little bit more of a, I almost said working class, but I don't want to accuse these guys of not being working class types, because
let's pull it back here. He went full Stone Cold. That's what he did. Cold Steve Austin, yes, promo.
Yes. I would agree with you.
Yeah. Ass kicker, very much in that vein. Taking it to the other company that he was part of, sort of, but also being like, this is where we need to be. I'm not being nice about everybody, yes, else. I'm not being, let's all hold hands and be kumbaya.
Yes.
You want to watch good stuff, this is where we got to be, but not saying the line like Kevin Nash did, where the big boys play, because that's not going to be.
But and then did it to a blue collar town like Indianapolis, right?
Yeah.
And got those folks, you know, there's a race car dude in the audience. Like, this is sort of folks that spent, you know, money that they don't always have to go to a show to do this thing. Like, that's, it just meant something more comfortable. Partly, you know, him being a Midwest guy. And so, yeah, he just kind of spoke it differently. I don't know, but I agree with you. Like, where was this 2 weeks ago? Imagine this 2 weeks ago and how it could have simmered and flattened so much.
He was in Japan winning the title. I mean, that's basically what it was.
That's fair. He had other stuff to do, yeah.
I don't want to make corrections, but he was in the Windy City when he won the title. It was not in Japan. It was actually a
New Japan Strong show.
Yeah, it was at a Strong show.
I apologize. Chicago is the Tokyo of the Midwest. However, as we're talking about different parts that we are there, I also enjoyed the Roman Fierce Ospreay sign behind him the entire time he's having his promo, which was just wonderful.
It's a good sign.
Don Callis is a creep. Agreed. also really
some,
nice.
There was also some green shirt guys from Wish.com there too.
Yep.
There was a sign later on. I'll try and find it that I laughed out loud at, and I can't remember what it was, but
there were a lot of good signs.
There were some good signs in Indianapolis. Well done.
Well done. Like I said, he went full Stone Cold, and he calls out the Don Callis family, but he calls out Will Hobbs. Interesting choice. Interesting choice. I don't know.
What do you guys feel about that one? I like Hobbs, so I'm happy with it to see more Hobbs. I think that what was the John Moxley's take was what? I'm going to pick the biggest and baddest one of the bunch sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And they alluded to it. I don't know what it is. I guess there's some sort of John Moxley Hobbs history that I'm not privy to that they had something in the past about. I don't know if you two know what this is. Is it kind
it's
of a thing?
Forced. It's kind of forced.
They made it sound like there was something. So I understand John Moxley being like, I'm going to pick the guy that nobody thinks I can beat. And then part of me is like, yeah, he kind of looks like he'll snap you in half. Could have picked any of them. I don't know. But it's kind of funny how it's like, I'm not going to pick Ospreay. I'm going to pick Powerhouse Hobbs.
Yeah. especially wearing the championship he's wearing, you think he's going to go after somebody that's had this title. Sure. So,
let me pick that guy. Okay. Sure. Are you sure? Yeah. Okay, fine.
Mikey, are you sure?
I'm in the same boat as the professor. More Will Hobbs on my television screen is never going to be an issue.
Right.
You know we're going to get Mox and Will at some Mr. Birdman himself, Ospreay.
Birdman. I mean, he just ran through Claudio tonight. He was running through Brian, basically on Sunday.
Which we'll talk about that match. There were something interesting moments in that Claudio match.
We'll get there.
What was this camera shot they had with Moxley? Did he forget where the camera was? Or did he want to shoot it in this weird... no holds barred 1980s movie thing.
So Mox is, even in a previous company, Mox has always had this very lack of spatial awareness of where the camera is, which is what makes him one of the greats when it comes to delivering these promos, because he's like, let me look at this camera, look at that camera. He's like, no, I'm just gonna talk, cameraman, you get paid to follow me around.
Follow me, camera guy.
So there's more of an authentic feel with Mox, because he's like, I'm not looking at a camera, but if you catch me, hey, what's up?
I don't hate that. And I respect that. And I think that's fun. There was just something about the shot of him walking in the ring and the postmodern filmmaking behind him of the shot of him in the ring in the distance. I kind of liked it. I didn't hate it.
Big fight feel, documentary style, like UFC shot. It's not a wrestling shot.
And when I unpacked it a little bit and then here with you all, it's like, I think he's the only one who could pull that off, right? Like, no one else could really do the camera angle of that thing and make it look genuine. I think that was great.
John Moxley could cut an 80s style promo with his back to the camera and it would be fine.
Like some 80s style promos where the back's to the camera for 90 seconds and then turning around at the end. Yeah.
You're lucky if they got that. The Bulldog never turned around, but we transitioned kind of a hard gear change to Mercedes Moné backstage, pre-taped, better than her one with Alex Marvez. I really just chalk it up to the fact that Alex Marvez wasn't in the room. And Mercedes kind of went off on her own, did her same promo she's been doing for a while, but called out the fact that she was attacked in the dark, so it could be Julia, but let's also force feed it could be Willow, because I still have to be angry at her. And, money talks, so, don't talk over me. I'm Mercedes Moné. That type of thing.
It's fine.
Yeah.
I kind of want them to use her for things, but it's fine.
I'd like something new.
Yeah. Something that's not pre-tape. Yeah, that'd be nice. But, she's on my screen, so that makes me happy.
Mikey's just sitting there like, I'm just waiting.
I hope we don't have to wait 6 weeks until we get an in-ring debut from her, because we have between Dynasty and Double or Nothing, that's 6 whole weeks. And yep. I don't know if it was in her contract when she signed with AEW that she gets to do her in-ring debut at a pay-per-view, but like,
could be. Well, it's weird how they've brought her back to do. They did. We had, what, 3 weeks of killer promos, and the last 3 weeks have been kind of like pre-taped, hints of things.
The same promo.
You could, I don't want to use the term feud, but you could have had a short feud to, you know, kick off with Mercedes and whoever. Sure. Hit somebody who in a loss would still look great to Mercedes, but like
Stat. Stick her with Stat because she's going against Willow. Take Stat out of the picture. Mm-hmm. I will say what I've noticed, you bring that up, Professor, is that progressively, because she comes out later in the show, each week, she's gotten like inching closer to actually doing a move. Like she did her finisher the first time she was out, but then she's been inching closer again, like this week with the chair and all that. So I'm assuming after Dynasty, unless she does something at the end to like really take out whoever wins that match or whatever goes on to it, she'll continue to inch closer. So maybe she'll run the ropes once. Maybe she'll like actually climb a turnbuckle. And by the time we get to Double or Nothing, she'll have done one kick and maybe a punch.
Talk about ramping somebody up. It's going to take you 9 months to get there. That's some Triple H stuff. I don't know. I'm wondering if it was sort of, hey, you're back, let's give you a few weeks off, or hey, let's get you prepped, let's get some stuff in the can, as they used to say, so that we can put this out there whenever we want to. We kind of know where we're going. I will say her pre-taped stuff is not as bad as some other pre-taped stuff, which we will talk about.
Oh, yeah.
But it's still, again, if you're watching this weekly, you know it's pre-taped stuff. And it's like, that takes it away from me. But
minus Alex Marvez. And Mikey, I know you agree with that as well.
Alex Marvez.
But we jump kind of like really right into the first match of the night, as we're going to have Adam Copeland and Willow Nightingale take... No, you're shaking your head. Not really?
No, I'm saying no because I'm going to have a lot to say.
Adam Copeland and Willow Nightingale are taking on Brody King and Julia Hart in a mixed gender tag match, per se. Adam Copeland makes his entrance. Willow's music comes on. I'm like, here we go. It's going to be fun. I'm like, it was interesting to me that Adam got the intro first because he's a champion. Willow has been attacked backstage. Stokely and Statlander are worried about her. She's not getting up. She wants to go help him. And House of Black doesn't get an entrance. They just come in and wreck Copeland from behind. And then it becomes a mixed gender handicap match where Julia Hart does absolutely nothing. Because even when she did get cheap shots in, they were the weakest, most ineffective things I've ever seen someone throw.
Right.
She was seen by the referee multiple times because her timing was off. And in general, she didn't seem like she was comfortable being out there. And I don't know what has changed in her life because she's so much better than this.
Yeah. You kind of touched on what I was noticing. It's like, but deer in headlights looking though, like something was way off. And we've been talking about this with a few performers, which could, we've seen rash of this, kind of how athletes get the yips or you get heady if you're on stage or whatever else. Like there was some calculation and sort of, if this was improv land, right, it would be a coach being like, reinvest, go back to that thing, find the game, or all those other cliche things that theater people
grab
talk about.
Grab your talisman, figure out where you are, ground you yourself, know, all do that something. Stuff.
There was something there where it's sort of like, you're having an out-of-body experience. Where are you?
And if we want to be like positive about it, she's watching Brody King have a pretty decent match with Adam Copeland and wrecking House. I mean,
yeah,
it's not terrible.
This is where my wife tuned in and she was like, who is that billboard of a man? Like just covered in tattoos. And
the one that did the crossbody that broke the LED board.
Wow. See, I thought there was an actual, she agrees. There was an actual injury. I thought Edge got crushed in that chair. The way he sold it, he kind of oversold it by the end, but I was definitely like, ooh, that probably really hurt. Oh, my God.
Broken rib, like bruised lungs.
Like, there was something there that was like, that's painful. But this was, borderline a squanch, right? Like, they just squashed Adam Copeland for almost all of this.
So Tony Schiavone giving kudos to Julia Hart, that's just sounded wrong. It's like, that's the heel, Tony. What's going on?
I took that as building her up, knowing she was out and just trying to speak to something, because Shivani's kind of like that sometimes. If it's a miss, he has to find a way to finesse it one way or another, or at least speak to what was seen. So I wanted a lot more from this. I'm wondering what in the hell the first 2-3 minutes of this, where we're going. If it was this, then just put Adam and Brody out there. Like, just let them go.
They're going to be going at Dynasty for a little bit, but Mikey, you have a lot to say on this.
Mikey has notes.
You were there.
I was very disappointed.
This is disappointed, Mikey, not spicy Mikey.
Yeah,
Disappointed Mikey is a lot worse because
sad Raisin Bran Mikey.
No, because I wasn't here for Dynamite last week, and so when they gave us the card of what we were getting next week, this was one of my most anticipated matches because
right?
I had four of some of my favorite peoples right now, and it severely underwhelmed me because of just the booking decisions all over the place and how we decided to tell the story in the ring was a mess. But I do want to shed light of to kind of maybe try to give an explanation as to why Julia was deer in headlights for this, because as someone who reviews all three AEW shows, which is a lot, but a lot of fun. On Friday on Rampage, Julia had a championship match against legit Layla Hirsch, which, you know, started off great and was going good. But the ending was very abrupt. And as I took a closer look at the finishing sequence, I think Julia re-hurt herself because she looked dazed and she looked like she was in pain after her match with Layla Hirsch. So I don't think Julia's operating at 100% again. And so,
like, concussion stuff or like,
and do you think that maybe they changed the match tonight because of that? They had to change it up to be this?
Me and Adolfo covered this on Rampage, but we both agreed by the end of the match with Layla Hirsch, Julia looked like she was seeing cuckoo birds fly around her head. And so I don't think she's still 100%, which makes me worried of what's going to happen on Dynasty.
Yeah.
Which would explain why Willow got attacked, maybe, because they're changing things on the fly. But who knows at this point? I haven't heard anything that Julia officially got concussed or is in concussion protocol. But after Friday on Rampage, she did not look great coming out of that match.
I wonder if that's setting up a protected angle where Willow finally turns and uses the chain, knocks her out. And then basically they can use it as the concussion thing to keep her out for a while and she loses it. I got to say, on that same vein, though, Willow's hot tag, and I want to see Willow versus Brody King.
Yes, like, give me. That part of the whole entire match was probably the best thing about this thing. I'm like, yo, like, book it, you cowards. Brody King
versus the cannonball. The cannonball.
Who has the best cannonball.
And a beautiful cannonball.
And the fact that the crowd did the woo, woo with her, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think... Adam Copeland, this is the second week in a row we've seen Adam Copeland not off his game, but definitely, I don't want to accuse him of being heady either, but just sort of keeping it together. So I wonder how soon before the match did they make the call, hey, Willow's getting jumped, Hart can't go, and if that affected some of what Adam was doing in the ring. Once, twice, you can hear Audrey calling him out a little bit, like, hey, Adam, give me something. Hey, Adam, da-da-da, like, talk to me. She swore on TV. I don't know if any of you caught that, but they didn't.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was like, hey, Audrey's dropping the F-bombs. Good for you. So I wonder, and I mean, Adam's a pro. I'm not nitpicking Adam Copeland, but definitely was not quite the same Adam Copeland as we saw from when he got to AEW. And Brody was just, you know, I'm going to bash you until Willow comes in. Okay, that's fine. And that's kind of how we turned. I love seeing Willow just destroy him. I thought that was great. I do agree with book it, you cowards. Like, let's see it happen. If it's because she's hurt, that makes me sad. And now I'm absolutely worried about her and her well-being. Because you don't want the second concussion. You don't want the first, but to get a second that affects you like that, that's when you start leading towards career-ending type stuff. So I hope that's not the case. I hope she's in some sort of protocol. Of course, they're not going to tell us for a long time, but we've heard how AEW has not done this, you could argue, in appropriate or inappropriate ways in the past by certain superstars and folks back and forth. If that's true, it makes me nervous.
As we should be. We hope for the best coming into Dynasty, right, as that both the triple, sure, 3-on-3 match with Copeland, Kingston, and Briscoe taking on the House of Black, and also with Julie in her match against Willow. I would love for it to be a match and she's actually better enough where she can wrestle at least at 70% and get through the match. Right. I don't want this to be a quick squash on a pay-per-view. Julia doesn't deserve that. Willow doesn't deserve that. Even if it's a setup, Mercedes Moné taking out everything
they
else.
They absolutely need to book their way around that if that's the case. Like, you don't need to embarrass anybody. You're not punishing anybody. Just do the right thing.
the thing I can see coming out of it is that they book Willow injuring Julia, then that feeds Mercedes into you've now injured another person and taken their title, just like you did to me.
Yes, I buy that. Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So that's that a way out of that, but I don't know.
Yeah.
We transitioned back to more promos. This was a promo heavy show as well. We're going into the pay-per-view, so we expected a couple more things to get things going. Samoa Joe discussing his match with Swerve, and you know, it's the same stuff that we've been kind of going over with Renee a lot, but I did like a couple of lines here. You know, it's it was a prerequisite for a punching bag was a great line. I love that there. No one knows where Nana's been, so obviously you don't know where, like, if you can touch that thing, it's disgusting. And Swerve won't choke on his own. Samoa will be the one choking him out.
Choking.
Mm-hmm.
This time.
Well, I mean, Samoa Joe's a one-liner king. You know, every week is just dropping one-liners that should be on t-shirts or bumper stickers. Like
bumper cars.
I was going to say bumper cars. I'm going to choke you. Samoa Joe's just killing it right now. Probably the top three on the mic in AEW or across promotions. Like Samoa Joe is still doing it well. Renee looked amazing. That's the polite way I'm going to say that. Renee,
as you should, because her husband was on earlier and he's going full on.
And I don't need him ripping my arms off in any capacity. I thought this was great. I liked this promo more than the follow-up because the urgency and shot calling of this one, I just felt more genuine and I don't know. I just felt this one way better than the other one. I think because the other one, and we'll talk about that when we get there, was sort of a means to an end promo, whereas this one was like, I don't need to see you. I'm going to say everything I need to say. It was great. I liked watching it.
Got the head shake. You know it's going to cut this out.
Yeah, I know. It was... Sorry. My mic wasn't cooperating with me. I thought this was a promo. I didn't hate it. Well, here's the thing. This is the kind of stuff that I'm used to seeing from Samoa Joe. I thoroughly enjoyed it, but it didn't add any extra layers to what we've already been telling with this feud between him and Swerve. I still thought it was fantastic. I slightly disagree because I like Swerve's promo a little bit more than maybe the two of you, but I think that if you coupled Swerve's promo with what happened at the end of the show and you put them together, I think it was a strong thing. But I am worried about Dynasty because there's a lot of back and forth in my head right now of who's walking out of that champion. But
oh yeah, it is muddy in the best possible way. No one can actually predict that, which is perfect.
Yeah, that's what you want.
It's what you want. And what I also want is what we came next. I enjoy a good meta joke. And this promo was the best.
This is fantastic.
Literally kind of, this was the night where the Bucks went meta everywhere. And it started with the promo package. Like, who put that in there? This is terrible. Just stop it. We're going to do it ourselves. And you see haggard and probably really downtrodden, hasn't taken his cocaine today, Tony Khan, sitting next to the backstage calling the show. And it just was beautiful. I enjoy them doing this. This is what the dastardly, like, mustache twirling EVP should be like.
Yeah. I love that they're leaning on it. It took them a little while. They needed a little bit of, I don't know, storylines and context underneath them. But now they found the groove of this. And last week, this week, we're back. Like, oh, this, if you want to be dastardly, like you said, like, this is how you're going to do it. To me, this felt like another subtle shot at the other promotion, right? Because that's what we knew it to be forever, was someone backstage on headset blowing it up and changing things all the time. And why would you make that decision? And everything up, putting it into the announcers, everything. So to have that sort of jab at the meta of it, and then to bookend it with grabbing the microphone later, hilarious. Yep. I thought that was super funny and different that we haven't seen. And that's also a knock on someone who's gone and is in another promotion right now. Like, that's really funny.
Oh, hilarious.
I think they've figured it out. And I love that Rainmaker's just there, like, what is happening?
Pack, you are a dead man.
Pack, you dead man. It's over. Okay.
Look, say what you will, the promo and the buildup to these two has been lackluster for me. They're going to kill each other at Dynasty, and I'm excited.
Oh, it'll be murder. Yeah.
But there's no dance floor involved, so I'm kind of sad, but that's okay.
there's a part of me that wants like one of them, like Nicholas or Matthew, to come out of this if they win or lose, and they have to be in like a Dutch Mantel, like Zeb Coulter, like electric scooter because they can't walk. So they have to come down like up the elevator now because it's handicap accessible. They come down the ramp, they have to go around the stairs. Like, you make it a whole thing.
On a rascal.
On a rascal, yeah. It says EVP on it. No, yeah, well, we go from there right to the match, actually. The Young Bucks and Okada are taking on Pac, Daniel Garcia, and Penta. And, you know, I forgot how much I enjoy Daniel Garcia. I am so happy he got so much to do in this match. Yeah. Him humping Matthew's head is always fun.
Oh, my God.
And then getting it back twofold, which is crazy. And Pac, I mean, we don't deserve him. He's too good.
And you two could answer me that. Is Pac just that underrated? He's as fast and as athletic as a Bron Breakker as some of these other folks, right? How they talk about short. Normally it's you have incredible strength or speed, but some have both. He has both. How come he was and is so underused? Or not? We don't have to unpack all that, but just watching it is, oh, I didn't even mean to drop that one. There's just something to that where I'm like, where have you been? You deserve all the things. You're going to fight someone with a hammer.
Part of it is because he's been injured a lot. Takes him out of a lot of things. But also, I feel like it just depends on who's utilizing him, because previous company, you know, there was a lot of hope for a lot of guys in a certain division, you know, for him. And honestly, that was probably my favorite division at the time until a certain Mr. Macaroni got his hands on it and, like everything else, just ruined my dreams.
Right.
But also, I mean, in the land of giants, while he is not a short man, he's 5'10", he can be seen as being shorter because, you know, he's in proportion. And so if you're stacking him against an Okada who's, you forget, is like 6'4", 6'5".
Okada's like, large. Yeah.
It can work against him, but he's worked so hard to be that gritty and powerful and also smooth. He is one of the smoothest wrestlers I have ever seen in the entirety of this business and can work with anybody in that respect.
He has to use a bodybuilder term, he has that Christmas tree back where he just boom and it's that perfect taper. Like, my God, this guy's a specimen. I want to see more of him. I do know he was hurt and he was out for a long, long time, I want to say. Like, it was a concussion and something else, right? Wasn't it?
It was career-threatening, yeah. Career-threatening, I think it was shoulder injury or something.
Yeah, they were really worried about him. On a whole, I thought this was fun, but I wanted kind of a little bit more from everybody. I understand it's not, hey, we have this thing on Sunday, let's not get hurt. So I felt like they were pulling it here and there. I thought Penta was solid, a little more solid than we saw last week with Adam. The sequence of, I just have it playing right here, right now. The Young Bucks throwing Penta into Okada. Okada catching, throwing back into the, like, whoa, what are we doing? Where do we go? I like seeing things I've never seen before. And there were a handful of things in here I had not seen quite like this. Especially Pac doing that, whatever that one crazy thing was. That
poor Daniel Garcia's back.
And Daniel Garcia's back crushes. This was a lot of fun. I kind of wanted everyone showcased equally for me. I just wanted a little bit more, maybe from Daniel Garcia, maybe a little more from Okada. I think Okada just kind of filled the spot here. But I get it. We're not trying to get hurt, right? But it's fun.
And same for the pay-per-view. Mikey, the professor alluded to it earlier on, but this was also one where the meta got into it, where I believe it was Matthew stole this ringside mic, narrated the match, and then got in the match and continued to narrate the match and asked to be put down while up in a back suplex position. How does that make you feel as a wrestling fan? Like, was that funny to you, or did that feel like it was a step too far?
You know, I love it, and it gave me shades of like when, you know, they do motion capture for video games too. You have someone yelling from there. It's just like, okay, pick him up, put him down. Like, it gave me like the behind the scenes footage that we would get from like The Last of Us and other mode cap games of within the last couple years or so.
Yep.
I thought it was fantastic. And I agree with the professor. I feel that it did take the Young Bucks, the EVPs, a little bit to finally find their groove of how they wanted to present these characters. But I'm on board because they're just to use a term, they're like peacocking it all over the place. Like they're just phoning it in. They're hamming it up. This is like Spider-Ham levels of tomfoolery and shenanigans, and I love it. It is fantastic.
Were
and they're
their hands
in on the
wet?
Joke. Huh?
Were their hands wet if it's Spider-Ham?
Maybe.
I think in the beginning, they were leaning too much on the power thing. They were in the, we're going to fire you, we're going to fine you, we're going to this you, we're going to that you, we're rich people. And then they took it too far snarky, and it was like this snarky, whiny privilege thing. They kind of found a happy medium and made it funny. So now it's working. I thought what was great was he took the mic during picture in picture. So it's even meta on top of meta, where I'm watching him talk and knowing he's talking on the mic. And then they cut back to where he's finishing the sentence. I thought that was fun.
Timing is all about that. Good match overall. Pretty fun to watch. Yeah. And I'm excited to see both of them have their things. Okada Pac is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah.
I could talk about that the rest of the night because I want to skip the next segment. My notes here are stop, blah, 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 blah. No. Segment end. Please, for the love of God, stop this. Oh, no, Taz fell down. For the love of God, make this end.
Man,
why is this here?
I think it was Mikey shared this in the group chat about the Jericho vortex and that Jericho was going to lean on it because now there's memes about him bringing this vortex to life. What's bad booking to me is if you're going to put Taz in the ring, great, make him a mouthpiece for Hook. Don't put him in there to play some sort of Switzerland, I've known you both.
To be Tony Schiavone.
Because that, yeah, if you're going to do it like that, make it Tony Schiavone. Because now you're a huge jerk for shoving Tony Schiavone. You're only kind of a jerk for shoving Taz. Because we're all like, yeah, I'd shove Taz too. Like, you don't have the same connection to that.
Did
right?
you hear that, Taz? The professor will shove you at any point he can.
And he'd shove me back. And I think he might get a kick out of it. That could be fun. I don't mind shoving Taz back and forth. I have no problem with Taz the wrestler. It's Taz the commentator that I'm like, come on.
No, I can still shove Taz the wrestler too. I'm like, just Taz in general.
So I think this was an opportunity to finally get Taz over as I'm going to be the mouthpiece for Hook because Hook, I'm not judging. I'm going to say this. When he says more than 8 syllables, I don't believe him anymore. When he says more than 4 lines, he can go bet. I agree. I don't like you. But once it's more than that, I don't like you. Like, I don't believe anything. It's just gibberish comes out after that. And
can
that's
he just
too bad.
Do the Shibata where he has his phone speak for him?
Oh my gosh, yes.
I would believe that more so. And it should be like Taz's voice, AI generated. Like, go ahead. This was such a strange promo. It looked like Chris Jericho, if for more improv nerd stuff, like, I'm just going to put offer after offer after offer after offer out there until you accept one of them. And Taz and Hook don't do anything.
I disagree. I disagree on improv level. He was not offering. He was filling. He was generating for himself. And when he got a response back, he then doubled down on, I need to get my airtime. Why? What do you mean? What do you mean? Why can't we do it? How about this? How about that? He kept like speaking until he found the thought versus listening to what was going on.
You're right. We're saying the same thing. You're using better language, but yes, you're absolutely right. Yes.
He's the worst improv player.
Yes. And I've said that when I coach improv stuff too. It's like, hey, at some point you don't stop making offers. It's not working, right? There's another truth here. There's something else here. It's not where we're supposed to be going.
Whereas I don't see it as offers anymore.
Yes.
I see it as definitions.
Absolutely. You're correct.
Sorry, Mikey.
So strange.
No, it's okay. I'm just here. I'm just chilling. I'm vibing to life. The song I'm listening to is fantastic.
What? So how old is Hook now?
Enough.
I have no clue. In his 20s. I think he's 25. Let me take a look.
I only ask because why hasn't AEW or anyone else pulled the trigger on
He's 24.
Him? Just because he's so young, he is incredibly talented. No one's coached him up on the mic yet. No one's put him in a well-booked, consistent story. He's sort of stuck in this weird, what do we do with Hook place?
JVL coming in for the hot tag. Tag him in, Professor. Tag him in.
How can you coach him on the mic? His father has never let him speak in his entire life because Taz just doesn't shut up. So how could you learn to have a voice when your voice has been your father your entire life?
Well, then
he hasn't found it.
It's maybe you got to go someplace else.
I thought we almost got it with Hookhausen.
Yeah, he was speaking with Hookhausen, and Danhausen knew how to work him.
Where is Danhausen
his mouthpiece?
Where is Danhausen?
In the Indies in Chicago right now, which is also Japan.
Why is Danhausen not? Why is he in the Tokyo of the Midwest?
Because he can make money there, and he's being used.
Woof. It's just hard watching it and knowing that it's such a misfire. Because Hook should be Austin Theory, Grayson Waller. Hook should be these under 25 stars, right? And Hook's just kind of not. The stuff that we see Hook do is remarkable. And having Chris Jericho in there as this sort of, will give you some weird hero's journey angle, but why? And that's not going to serve him. He's going to get stuck.
He is stuck. He's already stuck.
That's unfortunate.
But he was stuck when he got the FTW title anyway. So we're going to get off of this. It's not worthwhile. Jericho gets told off after he hit Taz, and now they're going to have a match for the FTW title.
My quick thoughts, because I didn't get a chance to say that. I hated this.
Sorry for that.
That's okay. Yeah. I hated this. Moving on.
I figured that there wasn't much else to add to it because we didn't want to watch it.
I had more thoughts, but we got a lot to get through. So I
ahead. I want these thoughts on this because this is a terrible promo.
I think this. Oof. I don't know what's worse, this or to compare to another company because I can. I feel like this is the worst thing that's happening, and I'm gonna get on my soapbox really quickly. Since everything that came to light from World's End up until this point, we have seen this black hole of Jericho just suck in talent, and then some are lucky to recover, some not so much, after being in storylines and feuds and partnerships with the Jericho. To me, and I don't care if Chris Jericho sees this because he can go futz right off or I can care, but to me, the last couple of months, I have never seen such a grab of using your status and of authority or whatever power you have in a wrestling company and putting yourself into these situations. We've been saying that he needed to go off of television. He needed to do his own thing to kind of let the dust settle. But what did they do? They doubled down and they continued to put this man on the television and continue to have him participate in feuds, in matches, in pay-per-views, on commentary. And to me, at least from what I have seen in all the promotions that I review and being a fan of a few years of professional wrestling, never have I seen such a more selfish wrestler than Jericho, because this is a vanity tour more than anything. Jericho, just call it what it is. You keep saying that you want to put talent over. That is some bull. And we all know it. I'm not dumb enough to believe it. This is just to give yourself the rub because you want to continue to be on television. And unfortunately, you are taking everybody else down who has a promise, and now they have to recover. Looking at Hook, Sammy Guevara, just a whole plethora of other folks too. And lo and behold, too, with the whole Appreciation Society too, I even throw Anna Jane in that mix because she was heavily silenced. And that whole entire time they were together, she didn't do much. She didn't speak much. We rarely saw her. And now she's finally coming back into her own and finally getting back on television and teaming up with Azumi of all people, which is super fantastic. I'd love to see that. But do you know how long it took her to get back on her television screen like this after having to distance herself from everything that happened? Jericho, you're selfish. You're a turd. I hate you. Get off my screen.
There, Spicy 100%. Mikey. There you are.
Yes, we missed you.
Stupid white people. It's white men holding their authority over the oppressed.
We do that.
This is your one curse, JVL. Apologies, but fuck Jericho.
Yeah.
I guess so. I will say Anna Jay, to give her a little more credit as well, she not only had to distance herself from Jericho, then she had to also work her way back up because it's always reciprocal, because her boyfriend got CM Punk fired. So, you know, we have that whole thing that she's working against her. We're going to leave that as lines. She's not on this tonight. It's perfectly fine. We can deal with that on a different time. Yikes. We do have Swerve Strickland in the retort promo to Samoa Joe. Mikey, you said you enjoyed this as a whole with the end of the night. I have to look at this as piece by piece. This was kind of didn't seem to need to be there at that point, or he could have even just said at the top, I'm going to address this in the ring like a man, unlike Samoa Joe, who has to do this pre-taped. Thank you, Renee. And then he would leave. But he took it a little longer than he probably should have to set that up.
Yeah.
So.
Right. And I in a weird way, I agree with you, because I think by itself, this didn't really do much or add much. I still enjoyed the stuff because I was like, yeah, Swerve's been that guy. And knowing the personal story of what it took for Swerve to get to this point in wrestling in general, like going and, you know, the grind and the struggle and doing everything. Swerve's journey to get to where we are right now has been a fantastic, you know, thing. So if you have a chance, listen to his podcast, listen to other podcasts he does, because the dude is fantastic in the ring, but he's one of the humblest people on the planet. I put him and Ospreay in that category because they are massively great in the ring. They're even better human beings. The reason I look at it both from this promo and what we got at the end too, because my writer's mentality doesn't work very well in chunks and pieces. I need to see the whole through line of, you know, from beginning to end in order to see where the grand chasm of things go. I think by itself, this promo didn't add much. I still enjoyed it. But with what we got at the end, I was like, all right, it's fine. It was I was like, okay, I see where we're going and I dig it.
Same here. But we'll move on to this was a really surprising match that came up. Mariah May comes out to take on Deonna Purrazzo. Automatically, I thought Mikey's going to love this match because Deonna's involved. Well, commentary was pretty good. Commentary was pretty good for a bit there. I did miss Toni Storm being on commentary during one of these matches. Her at ringside still is fun, but it seemed like she needed to be there to shut Taz up.
But her outfit was overall, hilarious.
It was so hilarious. She threw the shoe as well as kicked Deonna in the head. This went longer than I thought it was going to. It went through a full commercial break, which is hysterical. But, you know, I feel like Mariah's getting overshadowed by Toni a little too much, and she's too good of a wrestler at this point. I'm hoping something comes of that.
I agree. I don't think she was quite jobbing for Deonna, but she took some shots here. Deonna Purrazzo was laying her out over and over again. There was a good give and take in the first half of this for sure, but then it kind of shifted to Deonna's going to hit you super hard, take some shots, whip your hair around. I do think Tony's overshadowing a little bit now that we're kind of giving Mariah May more to do. I love that they got a full match, went through commercial break. There was something missing for me in this. I don't know
They were tentative. Yeah, there was a couple of slow shots.
There was a few, like, I'm going to wait for you here, I'm going to wait for you there things. It wasn't quite like, I'm not going to get you hurt, but it was definitely not sharp. That's me being nitpicky, you know, and I could not do what they do, but more women's wrestling, I'm just happy that they're there.
I just want more for all four of these women that are involved in what we're getting. I'm still excited for the championship match we're getting at Dynasty, but I feel that for the last 2 weeks we've been, and I said this in the other AEW product reviews too, we were in such a weird vortex where the lesbian honest like season happened for 2 whole weeks. And look, I'm all for women owning, you know, that power and that fluidity and whatnot. I mean, come on, we're called the Biconics, for goodness sakes. But I was just like, every other show for the last 2 weeks was like that. I was like, we're back to our regular scheduled programming. I was just like,
yeah.
I mean, we did get Tony's feet. Let's just say that out loud. But
The internet grabbed a hold of it, and there are some places where I had to take a shower afterwards. So I'm like, ew.
Don't go to those places, Mikey. Don't go there.
Twitter is.
Why'd you go to those places?
Because Twitter.
So we don't have to.
Yes, somebody has to. Oh, I take one for the team, but it's really weird because I still love Mariah May, And now I'm even more infuriated of how we're using her right now, because I just watched her interview she did with Ring the Bell. Shout out to DS and Paloma Star. Love you too. Holding it down for women's wrestling. I would love to meet them one day and do a collab with them. But
you will. You will.
But the fact of going over Mariah's history and how much she's actually really good in the ring, and then all the stuff we got to see from Stardom with her, I was just like, I don't know if it's Tony Khan, if it's whoever's booking the women's division, but I feel that they keep holding Mariah back, and I don't understand why.
Maybe they're saving her for Tony Storm, like to have that breakout moment, but it's hurting her in the respect of that she's slower than she needs to be. I also did enjoy the dueling chants we had of "We want tables, no we don't" chants the entire time. The first time I've heard that in a while, where it was like 50-50. We want tables, no we don't.
We don't.
Yeah. Can we talk about Luther getting destroyed?
Oh, he got
after
decked.
He got cheered. Yeah,
he got
after
decked.
Getting taken out. Destroyed.
Thunder don't play, man.
Mariah ends up losing, and Thunder Rosa comes down to save Deonna from the beatdown that obviously ends up happening. And oh my God, she did not hold back. Luther had, like, it was in next week.
I felt that was personal. Thunder's just like, you stole my Lunchable. Bam, in the face.
It's even worse. What took the cookies out of the Lunchable and just left the Lunchable.
Oh, rude.
Well, they're all filled with lead, so it doesn't matter.
That's why my son stopped eating them, because we found that out.
In that same vein, though, I have this down here. Tony Schiavone, she steamrolled his ass.
That was a good one.
Said that out loud. So good.
That was
I think it was sort of.
We knew the bump was coming, and I knew, like, at the split of the moment before it happened, like, oh, she's gonna hit. I don't know if Luther realized she was coming in that hot. Yeah. I don't know if Luther realized that she was gonna.
When La Meta is on her way down, you better get out the way. Get out the way.
She had a full head of something.
And the word of Ludacris, move, chick, get out the way.
Move.
Yeah.
Get out the way.
And then she just proceeded to rub purple lipstick all over her face.
To get back at Tony for doing that to her makeup like 2 weeks ago, or was it a week ago?
Exactly. So, exactly.
I some of our other co-hosts here are huge Thunder Rosa fans. I really want her to get the push, because she should be in that top four, top five conversation. She just doesn't get booked like a top four, top five talent.
I don't care what nobody says. The best women's match that AEW has had in this company's history is that lights out match between Thunder and Britt. That is still my far the best match that we've gotten in AEW for the women's division, and anyone can fight me. There's no bigger fan than myself with Thunder.
Sure.
My only worry is because commentary keeps bringing up the fact that Thunder is going after Tony for the title she never truly lost. She had to give it up due to injury, which then we had a weird intern with Tony Storm with the first reign, and then she became the official. It was a whole mess. It was a mess.
It was.
And I'm so I mean, I think I know what the inevitable conclusion is that Dynasty, which makes me a little sad. But
sure.
But it also legitimizes Tony's thing in the first place, too. So we never know what's going to happen here. Professor is trying to get out of his entire interrogation life from the sun.
I'm in the Grail room, the Ark room, and the thing's hit me right in the face. I thought that.
You got to love it. So I have a question for you both. In your wrestling shows, do you like dueling, like, basically rap battle back and forth promos where people just make fun of each other? Because that's what we got with the Bang Bang Gang being the Bang Bang Gang and Renee having to not want to say the Bang Bang Gang. That was kind of icky. And then we had the Acclaimed Daddy Ass by themselves basically saying, nah, that's not right. We're going to do this. And retorting that Billy Gunn basically has to squash Jay White. I don't like the build for this match. I want this to be over. I want this to be done. I don't know about you two.
They're better than this.
Stay tuned for a predictions video, because we have some notification about what this match is.
I think that they're just better than they are presenting themselves. I do like that they talked about unifying this belt, right? Like, this is all going to be under one banner from now on. Fine. I want to go check and watch the last 3 weeks worth of promos and see if these were all shot at once.
I'm going to tell you. Spoiler alert, they probably were. And a lot of them were not even on location. They were from, like, randomly Jay White's house, or, you know. Can I quickly recap this feud for you guys really quickly, since, you know,
30 seconds, go.
Okay, 30 seconds. You know, this group came together because they wanted to get back at, you know, the devil and the Undisputed Kingdom. But obviously, we lost the plot when it comes to that. Then it basically turned into will they, won't they? Then the Bang Bang Gang turned on the Acclaim and Billy Gunn. And then we had promo shot by the pool, which was funny. They also made fun of Darby Allin's broken foot. And then for some reason, the Bang Bang Gang like broke, did a B&E into Billy Gunn's house for no apparent reason that had no payoff. And then they decided, hey, we're going to futz around. We're going to mess with the Acclaimed. We're going to attack everybody. And you know what? Guess what, kids? Because Professor spoiled it for everybody before I got a chance to. But guess what, kids? We're unifying the AEW Trios and the Ring of Honor Six-Mans into one championship. And it is happening on 0 hour. God, these six guys deserve better. And yeah, that is your recap of how we built this field. AEW did not give a flying futz about it, and neither do I.
Also, Billy Gunn talked about child abuse because he talked about how he beat Jay White as bad as he beat his children.
He kind of did.
Oh, I am so upset of how this feud has been built because it's been a nothing sandwich, mother fluffer.
This is a nothing like hoagie. There was too many like meats involved. I feel like you're missing a bunch of oil and exactly. It's a lot of ass.
Can you get an ass po' boy sandwich? Is that a thing? Like, I just want ass.
Yo, low key though, the gun should probably invest in a Subway sandwich, Jersey Mike's, and just have a special called the Ass Boy Sandwich.
And we're gonna leave that as lying where it has to be. We have to move on from there because
I had like four in the chamber and I couldn't say any of them.
That's what Bang Bang Gang's been saying for weeks. We need to move on though because we're gonna be going over Orange Cassidy and Shane Taylor of Shane Taylor Productions,
who still can't get move on from the betrayal that was Trent.
Exactly. Well, Trent's forcing that issue at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna sound weird here. The wrong person won.
I agree, and I'm going to tell you why in a little bit.
Go for it.
The wrong person won, in my opinion, because you have this distraught and depressing-looking Orange Cassidy as much as he's trying to hide it, because he really is heartbroken at the betrayal of Trent Beretta. And honestly, if you're trying to also build up Shane Taylor Promotions, because they've actually had a really weird week. They lost, they won individually, and as a... To put this into perspective here, we had the whole thing where Shane Taylor Promotions got a win over Jericho, Hook, and Shibata, with Shibata taking the pin. Lee Moriarty and Shibata had a baller match on Collision this past Saturday where Shibata got a win back. But then also, like, on Rampage, Shane Taylor beat up some people. Like, it's been a weird week. But honestly, I feel that Shane Taylor should have won in this in order to continue the storyline that we're telling, which also makes me very confused because we are going to be seeing Shane Taylor at Dynasty, and that's a match that I have yet to share with the folks that I just learned about is happening not only in about an hour ago. So don't look it up. Wait till the predictions vary for 0 hour. Yeah.
Tune into that. What did you think, Professor?
I don't want to keep saying fun because that's not what I mean, but I enjoyed watching this match. I enjoyed watching it. I thought they worked pretty well together. There were a few spots you saw them call on the fly. The ending
that's
felt...
That's because Shane was so sweaty and they couldn't do... Anyways.
That's fair. I thought the dives to the outside looked a little... I'm going to say this. Safe? If you're diving to the outside, it has to look like they've taken a risk as opposed to... Great, I caught you, feet fall. Like, there was something a little more from that. That's kind of me being nitpicky. Something felt off at the end with Orange winning. And I think you guys are right. I didn't really make that connection that it should have gone the other way. Because everything that happened after it, I was like, okay, whatever. I wasn't as invested as I should have been.
Mm-hmm.
That, I don't know what it's called. I just forgot the name of it. That thing Shane does with flipping around and dropping and whatever that was. I'm not sure what that was called. It wasn't the DDT
JML driver. Driver?
Whatever that was wild. I thought that was cool. As a match, I've seen them do much better stuff. So that was, I'm not saying unfortunate. I still liked watching both of them. I like Shane Taylor Productions. I haven't seen a lot of them on Dynamite. We haven't seen them over here too much.
Go watch Collision because they are a staple in Collision.
Yeah, I gotta watch more.
Also, we have an actual British person as part of Shane Taylor Promotions too, Professor. So you can now tell the difference between JY and Anthony Ogogo.
Not and a
Anthony Ogogo actually took that dive and he flopped hard enough to knock over the stupid Ric Flair energy drinks. So it wasn't too bad. Also, you want to talk about bad bumps. Matt Sydal took that chair to the head really badly.
I don't know who took this worse, him or Rhea Ripley last week.
That was just a full chest pass. Like, my God.
The chair opened up and it hit him on the edge. Like, I don't know what went wrong.
Matt Sydal stole some of Mama Sue's cookies.
So there's chair shots you hear that get that muffled, we did everything right sound. When it sounds like a home run, that crack from like the early 90s, late 90s, when they were just concussing themselves. Ugh, man.
Yeah, no, it's creepy to hear. And Christopher Daniels trying to run down a ramp is it's horrifying to watch. But HR violation aside, Trent has now betrayed Orange again. He is trying to ruin his life. The Shane Taylor Promotions got their shots in. Anthony Ogogo basically gave him the knockout punch with the left hand.
No.
This is going to continue into Dynasty. Obviously, we figured there's something going to be happening with it. We don't know what it is yet, but that was, it was the wrong person won. So I was left deflated going into the end of the night here because I love an Orange Cassidy match. I thought it'd be better than that, but they brought me back. They brought me back because my match of the night was the main event tonight, but surprising that is the case for some people, as we have Will Ospreay taking on Claudio Castagnoli. Mikey, you're pursing your lips. You're making that kind of Godfather face. I want your input on this right now.
I mean, by process of elimination, this was probably also my match of the night because everything else was okay too. I was disappointed by you. I think, how do I put this very nicely? Because I know that this individual would probably rip me to shreds in real life, but I like Claudio's in-ring work. I always think it's fantastic. My biggest issue is I still cannot get his lack of charisma and a personality in promos out of my head when I watch him wrestle, because he is so good in the ring. Just don't let him talk. Just shh. No, don't speak. I know what you're thinking. But, I mean,
you heard a little too much No Doubt at Coachella, didn't you?
I mean, this is my first year that I'm not going, surprisingly. Story time out off air, but...
But yeah, no, this was... It started slow, which I think was on purpose to showcase Claudio taking it methodically. Ospreay fights back. Claudio becomes a great tent pole for Ospreay to do his great stuff. Spikes him with a DDT a couple of times. It was really nasty. Mm-hmm. Definitely dropped him on his head on that reversal from the Hurricane Rana.
Mm-hmm.
Claudio was up in days. So this was a hard-hitting one again, but it was enjoyable.
That second Hurricane Rana, where they do that California swing thing to get into it to set it up, the heels almost missed right at the end. So Will Ospreay almost came right off Claudio, like barely got the boots right around the neck there.
It's going to be on Botchamania.
Yeah, you're going to see that on the Instagram. Ospreay coming off the ropes, doing that 540 spin into, I don't know, not really a lariat, not really a thing, but sort of it connects in the air somehow. And then Claudio kind of overselling it into a flip was pretty great. So some of the big spots in here really hit for me. I agree. It started a little slow. I'm not sure if it was sort of, hey, we got 20 minutes. Let's take our time. What ruined this the most for me was Don Callis being kind of off his game and non sequitur and sort of talking about, oh, look, he's a specimen. He's so strong. They must have said that like 10 times.
He's a creep.
Yeah, like making it really weird. Like showers at the YMCA, weird. Like, what are you doing, Don Callis? Stop doing that.
Well, and then Excalibur shut him up when they were talking about Moxley and how Moxley gave him that giant gash in his forehead.
Yes. If I don't pick matches of the night, this was the best match of the night. So yeah, kind of process of elimination. Like, this is the one that it was two A-plus performers performing at an A-plus. Like, this was great.
Shocker, Will Ospreay's in the best match of the night.
Was shocker. Shocker.
But we weren't done there. As then the rest of the Don Callis family comes out to try to beat up Claudio and take him out. Osprey is upset about this, and they keep brawling back and forth. There's obvious dissension. Kyle Fletcher trying to like calm him down as Moxley comes to save his butt and get his butt kicked too. It was a weird ending there, and that would have been the end of the show, basically, at that point. Do we need the schmoz at the end going into the weekend with Daniel Bryan not even being there, or Bryan Danielson?
Well, stay tuned, because he will be there on Collision, because they made sure to let us know Claudio and Danielson are having a bunkhouse brawl match with Powerhouse Hobbs and Kyle Fletcher.
Fletcher and Takeshita.
Oh, that's right. Okay, I take back what I initially said when I was talking to Adolfo. You know, I was like, I take that back. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Part of the hard sell for me is that Ospreay is so different than everyone else in the Don Callis family.
It's just that above, bruv.
It doesn't make sense to have this, arguably the greatest wrestler on your roster, trying to break up fights and keep the peace while the three of you are just creepy bruisers ruining every match.
We're waiting until Mark Davis comes back. That's literally what this is. We're waiting until he gets the clear.
Someday when it's the turn away from that faction somewhere, when it's, I mean, it felt like that they were alluding to bringing Ospreay into a Blackpool Combat Club sort of thing, which I don't think Will needs. Will doesn't need to be in a faction. Will is his own man, and he's
great
at it.
Will runs his own faction, so.
Sure.
That's Kyle Fletcher, Mark Davis will be United Empire all over again. They'll be fine. That's the Civil War.
I don't think we needed the schmoz here. I like seeing John Moxley go in there and tied it up. Him and Hobbs caught eye contact. You could have done this schmoz in 20, 30 seconds.
Easily.
We did it in 5.
Yep.
You know.
And then we were told we are going to stay past the hour. We are going to go past end time here because Swerve's coming out to the ring to address Samoa Joe. And the thing that I will remember the most from this entire thing is not the promo. It's not something else. It's Swerve off the top rope, landing on the security, standing up. He came down without spreading and just landed on his feet.
Like legs A-frame, dominoes all 20 of these folks and lands on his feet. Dun, dun. I don't know how he did Grand Theft Auto physics. Like he found a way to stop the game and glitch it and fall through to the floor. Like how?
He
like,
went
who
full Wreck-It
does
Ralph.
That?
Swerve does that.
Swerve, which means that he jumped up. I'm trying to find the replay. He jumped up high enough to get his body into a standing position. By the time his feet touched the staff security guard guys, and then hit the ground. Like, how do you? I'm watching it right now. Like, yeah, how do you? His legs go up like he's jumping into a pool, but then he lands on his feet. And even he's surprised. He hits the ground and he puts his arm out and he's like, wait, oh no, I'm fine. And then stands up like, what is happening?
He had his Ricochet moment for NXT.
Sure, yeah. That was wild.
Mikey, how did he do that? Can you explain the physics?
How does physics work? You do math. Tell us how math works on this.
Well, okay. So this is how it worked. Because normally when you try to land on your feet, because of the weight of gravity plus the size in the frame of an individual, you can let the kids say break an ankle.
But if you add more bodies into this, then doesn't that take away the ankle reduction and therefore you're actually breaking that equation into two parts?
No.
And you break more than one ankle.
Well, the funny thing is we're kind of making fun of it, but in actuality, yes, because when you have more mass around the impact zone to kind of cushion and soften it, you have the transfer of the impact from Swerve into those bodyguards. That's when he lands on the floor and is able to stand up. The majority of the force has been absorbed through kinetic motion and the transfer of kinetic energy.
And kinetic energy, yeah.
Welcome.
I have one note.
Wrestling 101. Welcome to my TED Talk and my class. Y'all get an A. Congratulations.
Mr. Mikey, I do have a note. In the newer textbooks, it's no longer Impact, it's TNA.
Say what you will, man. Rebellion probably will end up being better than Dynasty. I'm going to be completely honest with you.
Probably will. It probably will. I just want you to be clear, you know, clear when you're saying those terms that they have been updated for the, you know, the newer wrestling.
It's okay, there, so. JVL. Some of us like good wrestling, but some of us just like to watch crappy wrestling. That's okay.
Can you make some kind of math equation on whatever chalkboard or whiteboard you use that has an abbreviation of all the promotions on it? So then we can finally figure out who is the best in the equals or who's over what. Like a
full calculus proof of this.
I can tell you who the best is if you're...
No, I'm saying put it on a whiteboard. Like, give that's me my a new, full...
Show your work. That is my new show project I'm going to work on over the...
Show your work.
That is my new project I'm working over the summer. I'm going to make a full-length series of breaking down promotions, in my opinion, with positive and negative, and then definitively come up, what is the best promotion? Spoiler alert, yeah. I know what the answer is, and I'm going to make a lot of people mad. It's going to be fun.
But mathematicians argue about math all the time.
It's true. And we have this argued about wrestling for this entirety of this hour. Gentlemen, we have come to the end here. We have gotten through another Dynamite, the go-home show for Dynasty.
Empanada.
Depends if you're empanadas. I'm getting there. I just want to make sure we know what kiwis are versus that stuff.
Sorry.
You did. You said the word. What is your empanada scale? What did you rate this, Professor?
Well, seeing as how the bar last week was my 4 out of 10 empanadas, this one looked way better than it probably was to me. So being subjective and putting that into the quotient, I don't know how math works. It's probably a 6. Not way up there. Not way down there. There were some great moments. The meta moment brings it up for me because I liked seeing that. That was great. Swerve breaking physics brings that up a little bit for me. Maybe 6, maybe 6.5, somewhere in that region. I kind of wanted a little bit more from every single match. Every single match was hesitant or not quite where it, not like last week, but everyone was still a little gun shy and I'm not totally sure why. I'm really hoping Julia Hart's okay. I don't want anything to happen to her at all. I'm tired of seeing these generic promos from folks who I know are better because it's starting to make me think that they're not as good as I once thought they were. And that's disheartening. They got to teach Hook how to talk out loud. Chris Jericho's watering down all this talent. Like, there's some things that I think can be tightened up. So yeah, I'm in that 6.5 place.
Monkey, how about you? How are you feeling at this empanada truck this week?
Oh, this is the easiest rating I've ever given a single Dynamite so far since covering this. This gets a 5 out of 10 for me.
Just right down the middle. Pretty
easy. Wow.
Look, was there anything inherently bad with the show? I mean, Chris Jericho being on my screen dings a lot of it. But if I take that out of the equation and I look at everything as a whole from beginning to end, from booking to in-ring to storytelling to all the different ingredients that I look for when I'm watching professional wrestling, I feel that some things hit, a lot of things miss the mark a little bit. And the 5 out of 10 is just more because I feel that they undercooked and they did the thing which makes it irritated because you have 3 different shows in your AEW programming. And so now it's just like, well, okay, let's try to give every show one good thing and every other mediocre thing to kind of build it up.
It's the dumping ground for stuff they can't use on other shows, basically.
That makes me laugh because it sounds accurate.
And this is coming from
painful.
The guy that watches all 3 shows and has unabashedly touted Collision as the best of the 3. And Rampage is where all the fun that happens. Rampage is where all the stupid fun happens.
You're saying the flagship show for AEW has become Thunder.
Yes. I stand by that statement.
Wow.
For myself, I can't go that low, Mikey, because I saw the 4 from last week.
Also, you need ibuprofen to get that low.
It's somewhere there. Very much so.
Over the age of 30, you need upstairs and downstairs ibuprofen.
Wait,
both ends.
Oh, I thought you made a different joke. Please carry on.
No. He made the right joke. However, at this empanada truck, I was filled, but not completely. I didn't enjoy the fact that we basically are not building to the pay-per-view that we need to. But at the same time, in my head, I'm saying they just had a major misstep last week that was not the fault of anyone involved except for the owner. They all were at the point now, like, can we do this again? Can we actually, are we allowed to go wrestle and be fun and have things? Let's play it safe and have a couple of generic promos, like work our way back there, see where the temperature is, and then we'll pick it up as we go along. My hope is coming out of Dynasty and seeing how that reaction goes with the CM Punk chants and everything else, they will do better. They get a 6 from me this week. Yeah. Better than average, but not by much. 10.
For sure.
Oh, man, that was a marathon, everybody. We really enjoy that you all were here for us with it as we get into Dynasty. Hopefully you'll watch it with us this weekend. Not together, we'll be live watching, but we'd like to watch it with you in spirit. And for everyone out there that joined us this week for the first time, thank you for just walking into that weird cave, picking up that idol of a giant fish man, and begging yourself to become a servant of Dagon. We really enjoy that you join us here for that and that you now can be part of this wrestling family, because we need more people in the stands. We need more people with us out there yelling at certain things, getting excited about certain things, and telling Tony Khan he's wrong, because we here are Biconic. You're all Biconic with us. And we'll see you in the next video.
Professor, let me ask you a very question. How did you assume that Jay White was British?
Yeah, I'm actually curious.
No.
I win.
Damn it. We tried.
I went for it, though. I was like, wait a second. Hey.
No.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another Vibe Tribe production. What's going to happen next time? Well, you're going to have to tune in to find out. But until then, remember, take care of yourself, love one another, and as always, make sure that you keep the good times rolling. Thank you for being here, and we'll see you next time.